ಸೋಮಸತೋ ಮಾ ಸದ್ಗಮಯ ತಮಸೋ ಮಾ ಜ್ಯೋತಿರ್ಗಮಯ ಮೃತ್ಯೋರ್ಮಾ ಅಮೃತಂಗಮಯ ಓಂ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ. ಲಾರ್ಡ್, ಲೀಡ್ ಅಸ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ದಿ ಅನ್ರಿಯಲ್ ಟು ದಿ ರಿಯಲ್, ಲೀಡ್ ಅಸ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಇಗ್ನೋರೆನ್ಸ್ ಟು ಇಲ್ಯುಮಿನೇಷನ್, ಲೀಡ್ ಅಸ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಡೆತ್ ಟು ಇಮ್ಮಾರ್ಟಾಲಿಟಿ. ಓಂ ಪೀಸ್ 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 ಬಿ ಅನ್ ಟು ಆಲ್. We have been discussing spiritual progress. In our last class, we discussed the most important virtue that we have to acquire, which is ahimsa or non-injury. In that connection, I had mentioned that there are two types of injuries that we make, one towards the other people and the second towards our own selves. The greatest injury that we inflict upon ourselves is not to realize the truth about ourselves. This is the greatest sin that one can commit against oneself. The true meaning of non-injury is to follow that way of life which leads us to know our real nature, also called self-knowledge or God-realization. To begin with, we have to abstain from injuring other beings, other creatures, other men. A lot of energy is conserved in that way. Our mind becomes clear. Then it acquires the necessary strength to look within ourselves. What do we find there? That we must become seekers of truth. This is the next virtue that we have to acquire. No man can progress in spiritual life unless he becomes a truth seeker. There is a beautiful story in the Chandogya Upanishad. There was a boy. He was the son of a widow. He wanted to go to a guru and be a disciple. So he asked his mother, "I would like to go and join the guru and learn something. But there is a rule that the teacher invariably asks, to which caste do you belong?" So this boy asked his mother, "To what caste do I belong?" Mother said, she was a very truthful person. She said, "I do not know, my son, to what caste you belong, because I do not know much about your father. I have been very busy serving people and I didn't have the time, opportunity to ask about your father. And meanwhile he passed away. My name is Jabala. Your name is Satyakama. Go and tell your teacher this much." So the boy went to the teacher and the teacher asked immediately, "To what caste do you belong?" And the boy truthfully replied that, "I do not know, sir. My mother was asked and she replied this. Her name was Jabala and my name is Satyakama. So I am known by the name Satyakama Jabala." In other words, he was a bastard in a way of speaking. The teacher said, "My boy, this terrible truth cannot be uttered by anyone other than a Brahmin." The story also illustrates to us that only he who tells truth is a Brahmin. Not necessarily that all Brahmins tell the truth, but only a person who tells the truth, he belongs to the highest caste. "I accept you as my disciple." And he became a great teacher in course of time, in his own way. Sri Ramakrishna used to put so much of emphasis on this quality Satya. You know that story about Sri Ramakrishna's father. He was a poor man, but the village landlord asked him to bear false witness, and his father refused, knowing that that would bring terrible punishment upon his head. And actually that happened. So the Ramakrishna's father had to leave his home, his village, his everything, and come out as a beggar with his two children. Gadadhar, our Sri Ramakrishna, was not born by that time. His elder brother, Ramkumar, was born. Sri Ramakrishna was the very embodiment of truth. Not only truthfulness, but of truth. Interestingly, this word truthfulness is called Satya. Satya is intimately, word intimately connected with Sat. Sat is a name of God. Sat, Chit, Ananda. How does one become truthful? So derived from this word, we get another word, Sat Sangha, company of the holy. What does it mean, satsanga? Sat, as I said, is a name of God. So that company which gradually leads one towards God, that is satsanga. Otherwise, you might come across self-styled gurus. As I was seeing the other day on the internet, the greatest self-realized Maharshi alive now, if you want him, then you can contact him through email. He will give you initiation and instruction through email. Self-styled gurus can lead you not only away from God, but even from your own happiness. They can rob you of everything. How do we know that we have got satsanga? This is the invariable test. That company which inspires us to become more holy, that company which gives us proper direction, that company which leads us gradually from worldliness to spirituality, to God, that is satsanga. Let it be a book, let it be a place, let it be a person, let it be any type of work too, it doesn't matter. Usually we speak of karma yoga. I call it, it's not karma yoga, it is karma bhoga, enjoying the work. Karma yoga should lead us to God, whereas the type of karma yoga that we perform takes us deeper into this world. We enjoy our work. We perform it not because we want God, we perform it because we are escapists. We do not know what to do with ourselves. We don't like our own company, you know that? Whenever you seek somebody else's company and prefer it more than to your own company, that means you don't like yourself. Simple truth. But we do not like to admit it to ourselves. Karma bhoga, that yoga which takes us to God, that is called karma yoga. Let it be through an action, a simple action, doesn't matter. So satsanga is that company which leads us towards God, encourages us in our spiritual life, inspires us with noble thoughts. That is satsanga. If we have satsanga, then it plants a desire in our heart to realize God, who is of the nature of truth. One cannot follow truthfulness unless one wants God. Otherwise, why do you want to have truthfulness? Truthfulness requires tremendous sacrifice. You know, Mahatma Gandhi used to call his movement, do you know what is its name? Satyagraha. Agraha means resistance, but not any type of resistance. Resistance through truthfulness. Are you true to yourself? Do you really want to sacrifice yourself for the sake of the country? Or are you seeking jobs? You know, many of these satyagrahis, later on claim, we also went to jail, so we are entitled for a lifelong pension. As soon as independence came, the first thing they claimed, all of them, you see, we have to be given jobs, it is our right. We must be given the highest number of jobs, depending upon how many times he went to jail, that is his qualification to get the highest amount, highest type of job. Satyagra, it is based on truth, and truthfulness, following truth. What is truth? That which we know to be right, that which we know to be beneficial, that which we know always helps both us and other people. That is called truthfulness. Usually, conventional term, truthfulness means reporting what we have seen through our eyes or heard through our ears. That need not necessarily be truthfulness. That which always takes us to God, that is called observance of truthfulness. Let me give you two instances. In Mahabharata, there is a story. There was a sage living in the forest and meditating. One day some hunters entered into the forest. They were hunting a deer. They found out one and they were chasing it. And the deer happened to run past in front of this sage who was sitting for meditation. And it disappeared. The sage was not in samadhi at that time. He observed everything. After a few moments, these hunters came there and made pranams. It is a custom, not because they like the sage. It is just a tradition, that's all. And very respectfully asked him, "Have you seen a deer?" Very truthfully he said, "Yes." "And can you tell us which side it has gone?" And the sage said, "It has gone this way." Actually, he had seen the deer going the other way. The hunters went the way pointed out by the sage. Now, was he observing truthfulness or was he untruthful? There is a beautiful Sanskrit verse, "Satyam bruyat, priyam bruyat, na bruyat satyam apriyam." Truth must be told, and that which the truth, that which is pleasing, should be told, and never one should tell a truth which is not pleasing. Now, what is the meaning of pleasing? If I tell you some truthfully something, and it is pleasing to you, is it truthfulness? Maybe sometimes, may not be, sometimes may not be, it may be very unpleasant. But should we be harsh because we are truthful people? So what is the meaning of pleasing there? Doesn't mean that which brings happiness, immediate happiness to us. Pleasing means that which is beneficial to the person. That is called truthfulness. It may not be pleasing, but it may be very beneficial. That is called priya. Priya doesn't mean that you are very happy to hear the truth. Most of the time we are not very happy to hear the truth. If we hear the truth about ourselves, we would commit suicide. At least we should, if we don't. And because we have got a large company, we don't do it. So, satsanga must lead one to the practice of truthfulness. Truthfulness is not merely reporting what has been experienced. It is truth-seeking. The great knowledge comes from truth-seeking. All the great scientists, they are truth-seekers. Of course, in the realm of this material world, because they are prepared to sacrifice any amount of their time, their energy, their very life for the in search of truth. That is why we are benefited today. How much they have sacrificed. How much the world has progressed. So many of the great scientists have been persecuted, you know that. And in spite of that, they continue their search for truth. Truthfulness is at the very foundation. Truthfulness, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, ultimately leads one to truth. So in that sense, whichever leads one to truth, which is God, that alone is truthfulness, not simply merely conventionally speaking truth. If one follows this truthfulness, the mind will be colored with the desire of God. God takes his place in that heart of a person who is practicing truthfulness. You know the story of Swami Vivekananda? He was the greatest rebel. He fought with Sri Ramakrishna. But in his own lifetime, he had to experience tremendous amount of difficulties, unhappiness. So-called friends and relatives, everybody cheated him, everybody, turned him down. He stopped coming to Sri Ramakrishna. They are saying that I do not believe in God. To say that I do not believe in God is to say that I do not believe in truth, in a way of speaking. Narendra, at that time, he stopped coming to Ramakrishna. He even started visiting those places which were considered abominable by society, drinking places, public places. Somebody very gleefully and but very truthfully came and reported to Sri Ramakrishna that, Sir, Narendranath has become an unbeliever, disbeliever in God, with great unhappiness on his face, but with great gladness in the heart, because the devotees of Ramakrishna, some of them were jealous that Narendranath grabs all the attention of Sri Ramakrishna, they don't get the share of him. So now they thought this is a good opportunity. What? Narendra had turned to a disbeliever of God? I shall not see his face again. That was the reaction they expected from Sri Ramakrishna. But Ramakrishna made one statement. He became very grave and said, if you utter one word more about Narendra, I will not be able to see your face. I know Narendra can never deviate from truthfulness. He can never deviate from self-control. And therefore, he can never deviate from God. He might not be taking the name of God. He might not be visiting Ramakrishna. He may not be bowing down before the images. In a conventional sense, he may be utterly unreligious. But that doesn't mean he was unspiritual. He who follows truthfulness and he who follows, who has self-control, he is a spiritual man. The rest are only on the way to spirituality. I remember a story, not very clearly, but very beautiful story. There was a king. He was very powerful, very learned, very wealthy, and he was very beautiful, etc., etc. He had seven qualities. Something he did, some evil deed he did. And then one day night he was sleeping and he saw in a dream. There was a beautiful goddess and she was going out of his body. He asked, Mother, who are you? She said, I am wealth. I cannot stay with you. And she departed. Immediately, another beautiful goddess came out of him, and she was going out. He asked, who are you? I am wealth. She also departed. So one after the other, wealth has gone, beauty has gone, valor has gone, learning has gone. Finally came a most beautiful goddess. She was leaving, and the king asked her, Mother, who are you? She said, I am the goddess of truth. Immediately the king fell at her feet and said, Mother, let all others leave if they like, but I cannot live without you. You please do not desert me. I want you. As soon as he did that, the goddess smiled and came back into him, and all the other goddesses followed because they cannot live without truthfulness. If there is truthfulness, then everything else follows. It doesn't mean that a truthful person need always be very wealthy, very beautiful, or very valorous, not necessarily. But God is always with him. truthful person is no other than God Himself. Satya is the embodiment of truth. In Vedic philosophy, our ancient sages had arrived at a concept called Rita, about which we had discussed earlier. This whole world is a beautiful creation, and there is an order in this creation, and there is a law in this creation. Everything goes according to that law. That inner essence which holds this whole creation together is termed as Rita. And individually, that essence is called Dharma. Dharma is the individual counterpart of this universal concept called Rita. And one who follows Dharma, he becomes united with the entire creation, which is another form of God. So part of this Dharma is observance of this truthfulness. Dharma is our whole life. Truthfulness is one of its expressions, along with other expressions. If one follows truthfulness for many years, Patanjali the yoga teacher says that whatever comes out of that person's mouth, that becomes true, because it doesn't mean that let the sun rise in the west and it becomes true. The thing is, a man does not transcend the law or Rita. Whatever comes out of his mouth, he doesn't utter through his individual desires. He has no individual desires. He has merged his individual will in the universal will. That's why whatever comes out of that person's mouth always turns out to be good, to be beneficial, to be truthful. It is not that he makes the something which is not expected to happen. He just follows the universal will. A person of truth has such a tremendous power. He accumulates tremendous power. So this is the second virtue that a spiritual person should assiduously practice. It's not easy to be truthful. We are cheating ourselves all the time. There is a truth about the body. There is a truth about the mind. There is a truth about our motives. But psychologists tell us we rarely follow what is truth. We want to appear to the world something other than what we really are. A truthful person is one who lives a natural life, a life according to his own nature, and that would never be in violation with the universal law, which is Rita. But the way to achieving that state is to conscientiously practice truthfulness. That is only the beginning stage. And slowly his mind acquires the color of truth seeking. A man who seeks truth, he alone finds the truth. Upanishads, Gita, Vedanta, every sage and saint, they are emphasizing this quality called truthfulness. Now if somebody follows truthfulness, he would be a very happy person. So if you see somebody very unhappy, then you must say that he is not following a life of truth. I can tell you that. Truthfulness always brings happiness, may not bring pleasure. We have to distinguish always between happiness and pleasure. A truthfulness always radiates tremendous amount of tranquility, peace, contentment, because truthfulness will not allow him to take a centimeter step away from what is not right. Truthfulness and righteousness is one and the same thing. So if a person is following truthfulness, then comes in a logical order the third quality that he has to, a virtue he has to practice, is called asteya, non-stealing. Non-stealing. Usually we don't go and steal things from other people's houses. We have a tendency to do it. We don't do it for many reasons. One reason is we are terribly afraid of being in the prison. Another reason is we are terribly afraid of public opinion. The third reason is we are terribly afraid that we cannot live with our own guilty conscience. There are many reasons why we don't do it. It doesn't mean that we do not want to do it. It's one thing not wanting to do it is another thing, not actually carrying it out in practice. We covet things. Lobha, it comes there. When you see a beautiful thing, we appreciate, oh, how beautiful it is. There is nothing wrong in appreciating things. But what is wrong is, there is an unconscious thought, how nice it would be if I have that thing. This thought very often follows, and that creates a lot of conflict. And we don't do it because of convention too. You know, this is what is called guilty conscience. It is also again of two types. A person who follows truthfulness, he develops his own judgment. His own mind sits back as it were and becomes a judge and say, this is what you have done wrong. But there is another type of guilty conscience produced by convention. Our parents go on teaching us, you should not say an untruth, you should not steal things. We are just brought up like that. So after some time it becomes a kind of mechanical habit. That's why we don't perform certain actions, but we think that we are very righteous people. We are not righteous because the result of truthfulness is not evident there, which is perfect contentment, tranquility. The desire to seek what is called truth is not there in our hearts. Just mechanically we observe certain things. This type of guilty conscience is of absolutely no use. We don't do certain bad things, not because we do not want to do it, but because we are afraid of our own guilty conscience. This is conscience born of convention, of mechanical observance. We don't do it, but where is the result of it? If a person is following truthfulness, the result must be there, which is the revelation of truth itself, which is reality, which is God. That's not there. So asteya is an unconscious quality. We must not become unconscious in spiritual life. We must find out what are our true motives behind our actions. Every psychologist tells us what we do and why we do. Most of us, we do not know. 99% we do not know. We may be doing things right, but why we are doing it right, we do not know. Our motives are hidden behind it. In spiritual life, a person must turn the searchlight within and find out, why are you doing this? In this context, an interesting incident I remember. Swami Vivekananda said this, once I met a man who is the most tamasic man, useless fellow. He doesn't steal anybody's property, he doesn't do anything good. That man came to Swami Vivekananda, sir, I want to become spiritual. What shall I do? Swami Vivekananda looked one look at his face and said, can you tell a lie? That man said, lie? I came to you seeking spiritual advice and you are giving me the advice to tell a lie. Later on, Swamiji was explaining, I was only telling him jokingly, but I know that that man is incapable of telling a lie. First acquire the capacity to tell a lie, and then afterwards you will acquire the capacity to tell the truth. Often we don't tell lies, that is because we are terribly afraid of our own guilty consciousness. It is not because we are truth seekers, because we are conventional, mechanical people. This is the lot of our mind, there is lot of motives hidden there. We do not know what are these motives. Even if we do something wicked, let us do it consciously, purposefully, of our own accord, not guided by something else. That shows awakening from the slumber. Stealing is one of the worst qualities. It doesn't mean that we actually steal. If you go to the length of understanding what is called non-stealing, one of our great sages used to say that if you eat more than you need, if you possess anything more than you need, that is also stealing. Why? Because you are depriving somebody else of what is his share. It appears to be a nonsense to us. But that is the truth. In this world, things are limited. Food is limited. Money is limited. Unlimitedness is not the nature of this world. That's why so many people suffer. Why are they suffering? Because they are not getting. Why are not they getting? Because somebody else is having what they do not have. In that sense, all the wealthy people, rich people, who are having more things than what they really need, they are thieves, in a way of speaking. In any case, for a spiritual aspirant, what are you going to do with so many things? Where is your detachment to things? Why do you want to possess things? Sri Ramakrishna used to make fun of these people, you know. Household, two instances come to my mind. A devotee came and said, "Sir, I am a spiritual seeker. Please give me an advice." Sri Ramakrishna gave him some advice and then sent him away. He wasn't very much interested in that man. This type of people, they say they are spiritual aspirants. What type of people are they? If they have to give a beggar 1 rupee, they will think 2 hours whether they should give 1.5 rupee or 1 rupee. And then they can't decide. Then they will go to their wife and say, "I am in a dilemma. What shall I do? Shall I give 1.5 rupees or 1 rupee? And at last they decide safely to give only 1 rupee. And they derive tremendous satisfaction. Yes, we have done a great thing. The same man, if he has to spend money for his daughter's wedding, he would not mind spending 1.5 lakhs of rupees just like water. And these people, they think that they are spiritual aspirants. Spirituality can never come to them. This is not an easy thing to hear. Let us examine ourselves and find out how much we are charitable to other people. If we are not charitable, then we are stealers. If we are accumulating, then we are stealers. So it is not that non-stealing, I am a non-stealer because I don't steal anything from anybody else. But you are stealing in many ways indirectly from the mouths of other people. These are harsh truths. But if we want real spirituality, we have to understand it at first. So from our mind, the very idea of stealing should never arise. But that alone is not enough. We should not have the slightest covetousness for anything. We should not possess what is not required. In a way of speaking, it is a waste of energy. If you have got a big house, then you spend more time in cleaning it. That is the simple truth. If you have many things, then you have got to waste a lot of time. Conservation of time, conservation of energy, a spiritual aspirant becomes very conscious of these things. So simplicity is not merely for the sake of simplicity, but it's a way of conserving time and opportunity and energy. Then the next quality, that brahmacharya. Many people, it's called sexual control, continence. Usually it is translated as continence, preservation of sexual energy. But the word, original Sanskrit word itself, is most marvelous. Brahmacharya. Brahmani charati iti brahmachari. One who moves, who lives in God, in Brahman, he is called a brahmachari. Otherwise, all these castrated bulls must be the perfect brahmacharins in this world. They are not attaining God. They are just what they are. But one whose mind lives and moves in God, he is a brahmachari. Incidentally, you know, you heard about Krishna. You know about Krishna, isn't it? Krishna is one of the greatest incarnations, according to Hindus. And he has got how many wives? 16,108. And he is called a perfect brahmachari. He is called a perfect brahmachari. Who can a man be a brahmachari having 16,108 wives? Because he never looked upon anything as non-godly, ungodly. For him, everything is God. Sri Ramakrishna looked upon Holy Mother, upon every woman, as goddess. as Jagannatha, mother of the universe. Sri Krishna was called perfect Brahmachari because his mind never deviated even for a second, 1 centimeter from God. He was established in God forever. That is the meaning of, maybe he has got children also. Similarly, a Pativrata, you know, a chaste wife, is also called a Brahmacharini. A chaste wife is also a Brahmacharini. Yes, with everybody.
Yeah.
So that is what is.
They have proved his greatness by saying that he had so many wives.
Yes. Absolutely true. That is called Brahmacharya. To see God in everybody is to move in God, isn't it? A chaste wife is also called a Brahmacharini. Why? Who is a chaste wife? A woman, a wife who doesn't think of anybody, any other man excepting her own husband, she is usually called a Pativrata or a chaste wife. But can any woman keep her mind on her own husband without deviation unless she thinks of him as God? Is it possible? It's only when her mind is fixed on God and she regards her husband as an embodiment of God, divinity, only then she becomes a chaste wife. She is a Brahmacharini. She is living in God. Only that type of life can lead one to God. Again, let us be clear about our definitions. A Brahmachari is not a castrated bull. So in that sense, there are many chaste wives, isn't it? They don't know anybody else excepting their own husbands. Does it mean to say that they are all spiritual women? No. Most of them are worldly women. Why? Because they consider their husbands also as a worldly man. Their relationship is a worldly relationship. It doesn't elevate their mind. So here, the physical act is not the criteria. What is happening as a result of this act? Is the mind being uplifted? Is that person going in spiritual life? That is what is called Brahmacharya. And it is true that lot of energy is dissipated through these sexual thoughts, sexual deeds. That is why Brahmacharya has come to be linked with continence or conservation of the sexual energy. But really it means every type of desire must be oriented towards God. It must lead us towards God. You enjoy your food, but it must lead you to God. Is it possible to enjoy something and also progress towards God? You see, before lunch, we utter a prayer, Brahmaarpanam Brahmahavi. Those who take lunch with us in our ashrama, they are very familiar. We are going to eat food, enjoy it. But the idea is that the food is Brahman, the person who is eating is also Brahman, the plates are also manifestation of God or Brahman. If that really that idea takes possession of our minds, in course of time, we are bound to think only of God, and so in respect to every other desire. That is why Brahmacharya is so much advocated. So a person who wants to lead a spiritual life and progress towards God, he must try to control his desires, not in a neurotic way, because if you try to control in a neurotic way, you don't end up in a monastery, you end up in a asylum. So it is not very much what we do, but what is the result of it, how we do it, what is our motive, where is it leading us. This is self-examination we have to make all the time. This is called Brahmacharya, living in Brahman. In fact, most of the Vedic rishis, they were all householders. They produced children. But they did not produce children as animals produce children. They produced as a spiritual act. And that is what spiritual aspirants have to do even today. There is no doubt about it. There are no two ways to spiritual life. One worldly way to spiritual life and another spiritual way to spiritual life. Only one way, and spiritualizing every act of our day-to-day lives. That is the only way. Then comes aparigraha, non-acceptance of gifts. You see, if somebody gives us gifts, then we are very happy. We have got in our language, you know, uncle, I come to your house, what will you give me? Uncle, when you come to my house, what have you brought for me? Both ways, we want only to receive. We do not want to give. There are three sorts of people in this world, you know. There are one sort of people who are accustomed only to give, very few. There are other sorts of people who are accustomed only to receive. They are also quite few. But most of us, we give and take. There is a nice story. There was a village, and there was a big pond near that village. And one day, a man was walking on the bank of that pond, and he slipped and fell down into it. He was drowning. He did not know how to swim. Another man happened to pass by, saw this drowning man's condition, and he wanted to help him. So he said, "Tumara haath do bhai." Now that fellow belonged to that group who is always happened only to receive, never to give. "Give me your hand." The fellow will not give. But the man on the bank, he was quite intelligent. He stretched his hand, "All right, take my hand." Immediately that fellow, he grabbed this man's hand and he was pulled out. So, take and receive, give and receive, that is the law of this world. We cannot even have a peaceful existence unless we follow this rule. We must give, we must also take. But a spiritual aspirant, he should not take anything without giving. Aparigraha doesn't mean, I refuse to take anything. It doesn't mean that. Literally, that is what it means. Non-acceptance. How can I live in this world without acceptance? What it means really is, take what is needed for your life, but give more than what you receive. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, monks, they always take from householders food and clothing and these things. But they must give more. How do we give? We cannot give food and we cannot give clothing in return, but we have to give in the form of prayer to God, in the form of japa. Whatever spiritual practices we do, part of it goes to the people who help us to live in this world. That's why we must do more than anybody else. Otherwise, what little we do, it goes only as debt to other people. What remains for us? Nothing. We should accept it as a gift from God, and we must also give to God. God is the greatest receiver. You know that? We always think God is the greatest giver. But that fellow is a very conjushy fellow. He gives this much and he accepts this much. Maybe in a lifetime he just appears for a second and whole life, our whole life he will take. That's why he is called in our scriptures, Taskaranam Pataye Namaha, salutations to the king of robbers. One of the epithets of Shiva is, he is the emperor of robbers. Why? An ordinary robber only takes away your few little bit of money or clothes. But this fellow steals your very heart. Where your heart goes, you are gone. Finished. Once for all, you are kidnapped. You cannot come back from him. He is the greatest receiver. You cannot pull God into you. Can you? You can only go into him. A drop can only become merged in the ocean. You cannot pull the ocean into the drop. God is like that ocean. That's why he takes more than what he gives. But when you, what he gives, it makes you infinite. He makes you himself. When God gives, what little he gives, that is infinity. Can infinity give finite things? He cannot. We are trying, struggling to get finite things from him, but it's not possible. So don't stretch your hand towards him. So the first thing he asks, "What have you brought for me?" When he comes to your house, he says, "What will you give me? How will you worship me?" When you go to a temple, you will ask, what have you brought for me? Aparigraha is non-acceptance because there is a mental obligation. Whatever we receive, physically we may not return, but there is a sense of obligation. I am a very clever fellow. I only know how to receive. I never give back. But there is a sense of obligation. This eats our very vitals. That's why we should never expect anything. Non-acceptance really also means non-expectation. We always expect things from other people. Not necessarily material things, but non-material things. I don't mean spirituality. I mean praise, appreciation, coming again and again. Now sometimes the speakers have got their own expectation. If more number of audience come, they are very happy. Suppose somebody comes, once in 6 months the person comes and as soon as we go out, Swami, today your talk is wonderful. Of course we are very happy. But another man, every talk he comes, sits silently and then afterwards goes away. With whom do you think we are more pleased? Not the occasional audience, even though the person is praising to the mouth. Real appreciation means, oh, this man really likes my talk, that's why he comes again and again. But not like that in that way. You know that story? In a village, there was a musical performance. And the musician came and he started singing. All the villagers came, but after 10 minutes, one after the other, they all went and slipped away. Only one man was sitting there with his legs up like this till the end of the performance. The musician did his duty, he did not give it up. And at the end he said, oh, I am so glad in this wretched village there is at least one person who appreciates my music. The man said, sir, I don't know anything about your music. The mat on which you are standing belongs to me. In the village, you know, everybody contributes a little bit of mat and a little bit of all these things. So we expect things. Even a mother expects from the children. You see, when a mother cooks something, she expects. The child may not say anything, but if the child says, Mom, today your dish is very nice, you give me a second helping, and mother's heart expands in joy. Because that is an appreciation from the child. We are all having expectations. If we expect anything from the world, then we are bound to receive a rude shock. And that is why, because everybody doesn't, very few people really appreciate us. Of course they tell thanks, it's a convention. Some people do really appreciate it, but that binds us. Because we are expecting things. If we don't expect, then we become free people. Non-expectation is the greatest freedom we can ever achieve in this world. That is called Jivan Muktatva. And it's not so easy. Even a great spiritual man, he has his own expectations. It is said, you know, there was a great spiritual sage called Swami Bhaskarananda. With regard to him, one of the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna was passing a remark. Not that it was a criticism, but it was just in passing. You know, even these great spiritual people have got expectations. At that time, Swami Bhaskarananda was considered one of the greatest saints living in Banaras. So what was wrong with this man? So this direct disciple went to visit that great saint. He was an old man. So during the course of conversation, that saint was, do you know, my photographs are being sold. No, he has got an expectation, oh, I am such a great man. See how great I am. People are purchasing my photographs. This kind of expectation is not expected of spiritual people. Because even that has to be given up. Even expectation from God also is to be given up when we progress in spiritual life. Otherwise it leads to dryness of the heart. Many times during spiritual practice, It sometimes we enjoy our meditation, sometimes we don't enjoy, mind becomes dry. When we go on blaming Ramakrishna or whatever God is, now why don't you come and give me a little devotion? Why are you withholding this from me? Is really, it is our own selfishness. We are expecting something from God. And what should we do? Should we not ask for devotion? Not that we shouldn't ask for devotion. Devotion for the sake of devotion is to be asked for. But devotion for our own self-satisfaction should not be asked for. Do you understand the difference between these two? I get immense satisfaction because I am doing japa and meditation. That is the expectation that we are seeking from God. That is bad because we are not doing japa meditation for our own sake. We are doing it, for God's sake. We are doing it for our sake because it gives us happiness. What has your happiness got to do with meditation on God? You want to please God. If God is pleased with your dryness of heart, would you not like to offer it to Him? Why do you seek your satisfaction? First, let me be happy. If you are happy, then God may not be happy with you. If God is happy, you may not be happy. What does it matter whether you feel dry or whether you feel happy? It's you know, this pleases God, let me do it. Whether I am happy or unhappy is immaterial to me. When a person comes to that stage, God's grace immediately descends upon him. This is what Sri Ramakrishna explains through that parable of two yogis. You remember? There were two yogis meditating for a long, long time. One day Narada was passing by the way. They asked him, "Where are you going?" He said, "I am going to God. He has unrestricted access to God. So will you please ask a question from us?" Yes. You ask God when He is going to come and give His vision to us. Narada said, "I will ask and bring back the answers." After some time He came back. The first yogi asked Narada, "Have you asked God?" "Yes." "What answer did He give?" He said that you have to be reborn once more. In your next life only God will appear. Immediately the man fell down unconscious. So many years I am struggling. It is too much. One more life. Narada said, "I can't help. Sorry, I can't do anything. This is what God asked me to convey to." He went to the next yogi. The next yogi also asked, "What did God say?" Narada said, "Look at the tree under which you are sitting. It is a tamarind tree. You have seen tamarind tree? Small leaves. Each tree contains billions of leaves. Said, as many leaves as there are on this tree, so many times you will have to be reborn. At the end of it, God will give His vision to you." The yogi got jumped up with joy and started dancing and said, "How gracious God is. He has assured me that He will give me His vision." This is the parable Sri Ramakrishna told. What is the significance of it? For the first yogi, spiritual life is a painful duty. Somehow he was carrying on this as quickly as possible, let it be done and then done away with it. He wanted long holiday immediately. For the other man, it doesn't matter. Even if Narada said, "God told me that you are never going to get God's vision," he would not have minded because he was quite happy to do what he was doing. He didn't consider it as a painful duty. It's a joyous work that he is doing. He is deriving so much joy thinking of God that he is prepared to wait for infinite time. That's why God is pleased, because he was doing it for the sake of God. The other man is doing it for his own satisfaction. I want to have quickly God vision and get away with it. What tremendous parable. Of deep significance. We all want quick samadhis, quick fix samadhi. This moment I will sit in meditation, next moment God must appear. Otherwise we say to hell with God. I will think of Him in next life. So this expectation has to be completely destroyed from our mind, not only material expectation but even spiritual expectation. That is called real faith in God. So these are the five virtues at the very beginning of spiritual life, we have to acquire. This cleanses the heart. Then we have to cover it with certain qualities in order to retain the grace of God, about which we shall discuss in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.